My name's Kate. I have been, I guess what people call an activist for a long time. I come from the UK. I was involved in Earth First and environmental direct action and in the mobilizations against the G8 summit, and I've been involved in anti-capitalist and anarchist movements for a lot of years now. And in 2003, I met a guy who I knew as Mark Stone at one of the organizing meetings for the 2005, well, organizing meetings for the mobilizations against the 2005 G8 in the UK. And to summarize a lot, we met. He was very nice, very charismatic guy. We got together, we fell in love, we ended up living together for 2 years. And in 2005, I left the UK and moved abroad, and that's when we stopped living together, but we remained very, very close for a long time. And the last time I saw him was in August 2010. I went to the UK, we went out for dinner. He was one of the few people in the UK that I was still very closely in contact with. And a couple of months later, I received a phone call from friends, close friends in the UK, saying that they had proof that Mark was had been a police officer who was infiltrating the political movements that we were involved in, and that he, and that they wanted me to know before they published this information on the internet. So that's why I'm here. Obviously that, I mean, that phone call was absolutely devastating, and that was 5 years ago, and a lot of things have changed. We have a lot more information now, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the last 5 years. If people want have questions about anything else, I'm happy to answer questions, but sometimes it's difficult for me, so please. So in the beginning, when we first got the information about Mark, obviously it was a very, very personal thing. Like, he was one of my closest friends, we had been lovers, and in the 5 years since then, a lot more information has been found out about the police officers, and now I don't actually think of that relationship as being a kind of personal betrayal or something that happened between me and Mark, because it took quite a long time to understand that you know, this wasn't something that happened between me and my friend. Like, the man that I knew and the man that I lived with never existed. He was an invention that was created by the state. He was backed up by state money, he had fake passport, fake driving license, fake bank account, and everywhere he went, he was followed by his handlers. He had, his communications will have been monitored, my communications with him will have been monitored. There was a back room at Scotland Yard, he was working for the London Metropolitan Police, that were processing the data. He would speak to them pretty much every day. He would be going back there every 2 weeks to do debriefings and get psychological support, supposedly, for the work that he was doing. And there was a command structure that appears to have gone all the way up to the government that was basically making the decisions about whether I would have dinner with my boyfriend or not that night. Like, so... Yeah, that's quite a big change from the relationship that I thought that I was having at the time. And it takes a really, really long time to get your head around that and start to understand. The other thing that we now know about the policing in the UK. So when Mark was found out that he was a police officer, obviously, because he was someone that we were so close to, it makes you start to look at other people who you would never think could be police officers and say, oh, maybe this person might also have been a police officer, maybe this person might have been a police officer. And they now, in the UK, we now know that 13 people from the social movements, or probably more now. It was 13 last time I checked. but
more common.
Yeah. And of those 13 police officers over the last, 17 years, I've met 6 of them in different mobilizations and activist spaces. And I also in March of this year, I now live in Spain, and in March of this year I got stopped a couple of times by the Spanish police in slightly bizarre circumstances, which eventually led to us having a look at my car and finding a GPS tracker stuck underneath the car. And so I've basically, over the last 5 years, I've basically had to come to terms with this idea that I am what I think is called a person of interest to the police or surveillance community. And so I've got quite interested in surveillance issues and undercover policing stuff in general. And it's becoming this really, since 2012 when the Snowden revelations started, and then there was the undercover policing stuff in the UK, and it's just got bigger and bigger. And one of the things that I ask myself a lot, obviously on a personal level, is why? You know, what did I do, or what was I doing that made me such a... What are the narratives that they create that justifies this massive stuff that they are doing? And one of the things that been looking at with the Snowden stuff is about mass surveillance. And there's lots of debating about that at the moment in Germany and in France and in the UK about whether it's okay for them to do this mass surveillance, and this idea that if you don't have anything to hide, then you don't have anything to fear, and there's no reason to worry about mass surveillance. And as somebody who has now really quite a lot of unpleasant experience of targeted surveillance, I think that they're actually part of the same thing, because basically what they're doing is they build networks of who is friends with who and who knows who, and all of their surveillance, whether it's mass surveillance or targeted surveillance, is based on that. It's on building these networks. And I read somewhere the other day that if you have 50 friends on Facebook, then at 3 degrees of separation from you on Facebook, you will have 1.5 million people on average that are your friends or your friends of your friends. I don't actually have Facebook, but that just gives an example of how that networking works. And 3 degrees of separation is what the NSA and GCHQ use as the distance that they build the networks, which actually means that the stuff that happened to me could be happening to anybody who is close to the social movements. So what we now know about what they've been doing in the UK is that in 1968, I don't know if any of you have read the book Undercover by
Rob Evans.
Rob Evans and Paul Lewis. Anyway, what they explain is that in 1968, when the Vietnam War was happening, there was a demonstration in London, and that went to the American embassy, and it turned into a riot. And I've heard that the American soldiers were actually waiting behind the door with real bullets, and they were going to shoot people if the rioters actually got inside the embassy. Like, it really got out of control. And after that, the police said, "Oh my God, we can't get caught by surprise like that ever again." And some guy basically turned around and said, "Well, give me a budget and 10 police officers, and I will make sure you never get caught by surprise like that ever again." And they started this unit called the Special Demonstration Squad. And I don't know if I'm now talking about stuff that you wouldn't talk about.
No, go on.
They started this unit called the Special Demonstration Squad has been inside all of the social movements, see on the left, but I think also on the extreme right in the UK, just being there. And they're not there to actually catch people for crimes, or they don't go to court and give evidence. They've just been for 50 years inside the social movements because they want to know who knows who is doing what, and they claim that what they're doing is that they're trying to pick out the people who are likely to be violent. But actually, they themselves say that in order to be able to pick the people who are likely to be violent, they have to infiltrate everybody so that they can. So they're just there, and they talk about collateral intrusion, which is basically that everybody, so my parents, my grandmother, my entire extended family, Mark Kennedy came to my grandmother's 90th birthday party and met everyone in my family that who are not involved in political movements, they're not involved in any kind of campaigning. My mum's cousin is a cop, in fact, but all of those people had their lives invaded by Mark Kennedy claiming to be my partner and coming to these family events. And I'm getting lost. And yes, so that's kind of what happened. And so in the last 5 years, what I have mostly been doing about it, apart from getting over the horrible, unpleasant emotional impact of it, is I'm part of a group of 8 women that is bringing a court case against the Metropolitan Police in London for a number of different things that include assault and abuse of our human rights. And that's been a really, really interesting process because, again, like a lot of the last 5 years has been about understanding that the stuff that happened between me and Mark was not personal. It was political. And talking with other women who have been through the same experiences, and the women involved in my case had relationships with different undercover police officers over a period of 30 years. So the first relationships happened in the early 1980s. And through talking to them and sharing experiences, we basically come to understand that the stuff that seems very private and personal inside the relationships is actually something that these police officers are doing, have been doing systematically, and I think are still doing. And there are patterns that we've identified as things that that we now think are part of how they are trained to emotionally manipulate people and psychologically manipulate people in order to get into your lives. And I think it's important because before I knew that Mark was a police officer, having been involved in a lot of political stuff, sometimes people thought that they were infiltrators in the movement. Like, it wasn't a term that I'd never heard of, but people always seem to think that the infiltrators are the slightly weird person who has no friends and who makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable, and you're never quite sure why they're at the meeting, or you don't really understand. And actually, all of the police officers that have been found out, to my knowledge, were very charismatic. They were very close friends with lots of people in the movement, and I think actually we were quite naive not to realize that they are psychologically trained to mirror people. So when I met Mark, he was really into loads of the same things as me, and now when we look at it, after I separated from Mark, he got together with a friend of mine, and when we were together, he was really into caravans and country music, and very shortly after separating, he got into drum and bass DJing and a whole load of other things that were completely different and were about getting into the life of somebody else. And also there was, there are some examples that we have of really quite blatant emotional manipulation. So Mark used to tell me about his childhood and how hard it was for him when his parents separated, and about how his father abandoned him and his brother when they were kids. I now know that his parents are still together, and there are other examples of things like that. One of the women in the case, the guy that she was with borrowed money from her to go to New Zealand to his mother's funeral, and he wrote her letters from the funeral talking about how hard it had been and about how he gave a speech at his mother's funeral, and actually his mother is still alive. And these are very, very emotional things that make you feel close to somebody, and they, you know, Mark used to cry when he told these stories, and I guess he was crying about something else, you know, like, the other thing that Mark told me that I think is kind of revealing and maybe important is that, at some point when we first met, I was at his house, and he had very little possessions in his house, and it was quite an impersonal space, and I didn't know very much about his past at all, and I said to him, like, you know, we were there, I was spending the night, and I said to him, you know, actually, this is a bit weird, and I want you to tell me a little bit more about yourself, because you could be a cop, or you could be a serial killer, or you could, like this place is like this, it has no personality. And he told me this story, again, very emotional, sharing his secrets with me, that about how he had been involved with the mafia in London, and he had actually been a driver for the South London Mafia, driving cocaine from Granada to in the south of Spain to London, and that was why he had money, and that was also why he kind of had no past and no possessions, because basically he was running away, and that there were maybe some quite nasty people who would want to find him. And he asked me to help him keep his secret. And that was a very difficult situation for me. And we had an interesting, I gave this very similar talk yesterday in Potsdam, and someone asked a very interesting question about that, which was about how the relationship that our political movement has with secrets actually makes it easier for these people to infiltrate, because you know, there are some places in the world where you go and tell someone that you're involved in international drug smuggling and they will call the police. And we won't. We will keep that secret, and actually people who have secrets are generally considered to be slightly cooler and more charismatic. And yeah, that actually, and unfortunately, I still find that story easier to believe than the real version, that he was in fact an undercover police officer. He before he came to infiltrate us, he was infiltrating he was involved in drug infiltration stuff in London, and so he actually was quite convincing. The stuff that he said, and he always he kept up this persona of having been involved in that mafia stuff for the entire time that he was infiltrating them. And how are we doing for time? Okay. When I asked what people would want to talk about here, I actually usually don't give talks like this in kind of anarchist spaces. Usually I'm speaking to people who don't get infiltrated and kind of trying to let people know, like let people in the outside world know that this stuff is happening. It's strange for me to be talking here, and I do occasionally talk in activist spaces, and I always worry because it's quite a full-on disturbing story, and I really don't want to put people off or scare people away from doing political stuff, and I really want to say that all of the bad stuff that happened to me and whatever, I don't regret anything that I have done as an activist, and I wouldn't want to do any of it differently, and well, okay, some of it I would do differently. But yeah, really, like I think I don't want to scare people off, and one of the things it was suggested that we talk about today is like what we can do, and how, like, if we, now that we know this stuff, what we can do to catch the infiltrators in our groups and to you know, keep going and deal with this reality. And I always feel when I'm asked that question that I am the last person that should be answering it, because I obviously got it all really, really wrong. But I get asked it a lot, and so I kind of try to have something intelligent to say as an answer. And one of the things that I think is really important is that when Mark was found out, and actually because I was living abroad, I wasn't involved in that, and I don't really want to talk too much about it because I think it was a very, very difficult experience, and it's something that was lived by other people, and I don't want to represent them. But what I will say from the outside is that I saw some of those people also when I was in when I went back to the UK in August 2010, and I saw Mark, and that was all going on at that time, and none of them said anything to me about it, and I knew absolutely nothing about the fact that Mark was maybe a cop until I was telephoned on the 21st of August 2010, and I think that is a really, really powerful thing that is really to the credit of the people of the research group that found Mark out, because very often when this stuff happens, people, there are whispering campaigns and people tell each other about it, and there's kind of rumors and there's no proof, and actually the way that it was done was that they really kept everything, like, like normal, like not didn't let anything didn't let anyone know what was going on until they were really, really sure. And I think the reason for that is actually because it wasn't fun that Mark was a police officer. It wasn't something exciting like out of the movies, like, wow, we're cool enough and hardcore enough as activists that they're infiltrating us. It was really, really fucking upsetting. Like, he was someone that we were all really, really close to, and so when people really started to suspect that he was a police officer, it was taken very, very seriously. And I think that is really important. Like, if there's somebody in our movements that people think maybe might be a police officer, then take it really seriously and keep it very quiet and try to find out and try to be sure. Because otherwise what we get is people being kind of excluded because they're weird. Or, I mean, in Mark's case, he was a bit weird and a bit different from us. He was working class. He had a job. He didn't go to university. And those are not criteria that I think we should be using to exclude people from our movements. Like, I think it can be really dangerous. People say, well, what are the things that you can say this person could be recognized as a police officer? He had a van. You know, like, again, not something we want to use as a way of excluding people from our movement. So it's very hard to do it that way, to say, oh, these are the things that you need to recognize in somebody to keep them out. And I think I really believe that we need to be open about a lot of stuff that we do, and people need to be able to come into the movements, and we need to be inclusive. And so I think, yeah, it has to be handled very, very carefully, and taken very seriously. And the other thing that I think is really important about my experience that maybe isn't the things that I think are most important to mention are the things that I just really hadn't expected. So I really hadn't expected that the infiltrators that we kind of thought would be there would be the people that I really cared about and was really close to and really trusted. The other thing which kind of comes from that is that once we knew that Mark was a cop, the emotional responses that I had to that, and I know I've talked to other people who close to him that so many of us had to that, were not the responses that we would have expected. Like, if you'd asked me 6 years ago how I would react if I found out that someone was infiltrating, like, found out for sure that somebody in my political movements was an infiltrator, I probably would have given you a really politically correct, hardcore anarchist answer to that question. And that is not how I felt at all, and that is not what happened. And actually, the mix of emotions, and for a very long time, like over a year, all I wanted was to see him again and for him to explain. And the feeling was like someone had died, you know, like someone that I really cared for had died. And except I knew that he wasn't dead, and I just wanted him back. And I was convinced somewhere in the irrational part of my soul that it was all a big mistake and that he could just explain and it would all be fine. And that took a really long time to sort out, and a lot of this process of understanding that actually he never existed and that this was all a big state apparatus that was part of a process of political policing, and yeah, it was very, very important for me to be able to have all of those contradictory feelings. And I think it's something that I want to say here, because now there've been these two police officers already discovered in Hamburg, and it's something that might happen here. It seems to be happening here in Germany, and to really try to be caring with each other about the contradictory responses and feelings that people have, because it, you know, like, people's emotional reactions to it are not necessarily going to be the textbook politically correct reactions that they should be having, and we really need to look after each other in those times, and it sorts itself out over time, you know. And then the other thing is kind of what to do about it when you find out, and I really don't have answers to that. I mean, actually, I have been, for the last 4 years, involved in a court case against the police. I've been involved in giving evidence to Parliament about this. I'm now getting involved in a public inquiry that is happening, run by the Home Office in the UK. These are all things that 5 years ago I would have said, if you find me doing that kind of politics, shoot me in the back of the head. And I really don't have... it's such a big thing, and it's such a complicated thing. I don't believe in the justice system. I don't believe in parliamentary politics as a way of sorting stuff out. I'm not asking for them to change the law, but it's just trying to get the information about what was really going on, and trying to actually do something politically that that responded to the scale of what had happened. That's just kind of where I've ended up, because as an anarchist, I couldn't really find any useful response. And if anyone has any really good ideas, I would love to hear it. And one of the few, what I kind of think of as autonomous and not institutionally political responses that there has been to this stuff, is what Evelyn is going to be talking about, which is the work of the Undercover Research Group, who have done a lot of the activist work in actually finding these cops out and getting the information out there. So yeah, I'm really interested to hear what you have to say. Because,
thank you.
So yeah, I'm going to stop there.